All right, let's get started, guys. Hey, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar, Hats Off, hosted by My Damn Services. How many hats do digital asset managers wear? Many, in a word. Today, we're going to have a little fun. The format for today's session is a little bit different, not the usual and conventional roundtable approach. And I'll explain a bit more of that in a moment. But first, let's get right to it and introduce our incredible panel today. So glad you guys made the time to make it here. If we just maybe introduce yourselves, ladies first, and an incredible woman at that, Lisa Grimm.
Thank you, Frank. So hi, my name is Lisa Grimm. I am the Global Director for Digital Asset Management at Novartis, and I am based in Dublin, Ireland, although previously worked for places like Amazon, Amazon Web Services, GSK. I have been working in DAM and in enterprise content even more broadly than that for the past 20 odd years, again, in tech, in things like libraries and museums, publishing, all the things. So I've worn a lot of these hats, and I'm really looking forward to chatting about them.
That's great. Thanks, Lisa. A man who needs no introduction, Ralph Windsor.
But I'll give you an introduction anyway. I'm Ralph Windsor. I'm project director for Daydream. We're another bunch of DAM consultants. I'm also editor of Digital Asset Management News, which some of you may have seen. I've been in the industry for 26 years. I've been a software developer, a digital asset manager, project manager, and also a consultant.
Excellent. Thanks, Ron. Last but not least, certainly not least, Henrik de Geer.
Hi, I'm Henrik de Geer. I'm also a digital asset management consultant for another DAM consultancy. I'm also a podcaster. You may have heard of another DAMpodcasts.com, that's me, and another DAMblog.com, that's me as well. So I'm also a writer, an author, and you can find all of my books on Amazon. Look forward to the panel and discussion on all the hats that we wear. Thanks.
That's great. Thanks, Henrik. I love your hat, Lisa. My name is Frankie Cohen. I'll be the moderator today. I've been involved in DAM before it was even called DAM. It started with just bringing a simple solution called Portfolio to a studio I was working with and just making it easier for searching files and logos and whatnot. And back then, there was no metadata. Everything had to be contained in the actual tag name. And ever since then, I've been helping companies, marketing, advertising departments improve their workflows and efficiencies. So thanks again, guys, for being here. Let's get started. The origin of today's topic actually came from a conversation between Lisa and I. I forget what we were talking about, but we always get to all the different hats and different roles that we play and all the digital asset managers play. And still after all these years, how foreign it is to many people that are not involved in DAM and what truly makes a successful digital asset management program. You know, the perpetual, we purchased the DAM. Why are people still not finding what it is that they're looking for? Well, as we all know, there's a lot that goes into it. So today, we're going to speak what it is, all the different hats that people wear, and maybe give some managers a different idea of other things they can be starting to get involved with if they didn't already know. And more importantly, their managers and their bosses to understand a bit more of what's happening. And we wanted to do that in a fun way. So with that, we thought we'd have everybody vote on the attendees today, vote on the hats they would like the panel to speak on. So I'm going to bring up a poll. Launch that. And if everybody wouldn't mind just taking a moment, and you can vote for more than one. Vote for as many of the different hats that you'd like our panel to speak on today. Just give everybody a moment for that. People are voting quick, got over 90%. All right. Let's take the fourth runner up first. And that would be the construction or builder in digital asset management. Who would like to start?
I can start. I think I'm going to take my hat off, though, my physical hat, because it is a little bit warm. But I think this is one of those things where, you know, exactly like you were saying, quite often, there's that bit that happens at the beginning, that vendor selection part has happened, but, you know, there's all that, you know, there's the bit about requirements gathering and figure out what it is you're actually doing from that part. And I think, again, it's an interesting thing that often the people making the purchasing decision are not the people who are going to be the users at the end of the day. So there's a big piece to build in there that you need to really bridge that gap. So you may be doing, you know, crosswalks too, like almost, you know, physically creating some things, you know, whether that's with metadata or trying to work on configuration, things like that. And so you really do need all these different skill sets to bring, you know, to kind of bring them together. You know, you need software engineers, you need, you know, people who are going to do user experience, you need someone who's going to think about how about all that content goes in, really process design. So there's all these different things that are going into just that initial, okay, I've bought the thing, how do I now stand it up and use it and actually start to get content in? What's my data model going to be? And, you know, that there's obviously ongoing care and feeding there, but you think about that, that can easily be, you know, 6 or 7 different work streams with many people under it, not just one person who happens to have all of these hats together. But we know often it is one person kind of doing all of this. Ideally, they'll have some support too, whether that's short-term or long-term. But, you know, just thinking about that initial phase of, we have bought the thing, how do we start populating the content before you even get to things like, you know, how am I going to interact with my users? You know, some of these other things, you're really just thinking about, how do I bring it to life? I mean, the building phase is already, again, multiple hats there. So I'll just kick that off for a starter for 10, but I'm sure you've all been in that situation where either you're doing it yourself or you realize I have to find these people and bring them together and I have to do it now, so.
Yeah, I'll jump in if you like there, and just offer my opinion on the builder role that a digital asset manager plays. I think I'm going to sort of look at this in a bit more of an abstract sort of view, and digital asset managers are responsible for building the value that's in a DAM initiative. So mainly that's obviously the metadata. It's also building up adoption and having to actually persuade people to start using the DAM. And it's the whole idea that the DAM is going to be something that develops over time. It's not like a one-off thing. You do it and then, you know, go away and it just remains as it stands. I think in a lot of ways as well, digital asset managers, they have almost this role. You wouldn't really call it a project manager, but more like a kind of foreman on a building site. They're responsible for making everybody sort of for actually on the ground, making things work and getting things from A to B, and basically responsible for building up the dam and making it useful to the organization. And I think those would be the main sort of roles I would see for this particular hat.
Yeah, and to piggyback on that, I would say that it starts with the idea of like, so we want a dam, how do we build it, right? What do we want it to look like at the end? Like reverse engineering that. So being that engineer per se, at least playing that role of playing reverse engineer and then planning it out, structuring it, strategizing it, implementing it, of course, with probably a number of people, so often software and potentially hardware or cloud individuals, because it's mostly nowadays in the cloud, project managing the solution, product managing the solution, building out across and vertically and horizontally to sometimes mm-hmm. across the organization or company or said companies, building it both as an internal and external tool, building it for more than just say marketing or more than just said products or a product for that matter, more than just one unit or one group of individuals or one department, so that it has more value. So you're building value, right? And if you can do that, then you can justify a potentially a larger budget, potentially more people. So building out that group of individuals that are going to be focused on facilitating that for individuals, because that's just one of the hats that we wear. Thanks.
That's exactly right. listening to you guys and looking at some of the other hats that were voted on and that we talked about, I think there's a builder in every one of them, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, strong foundation, making sure the planning's in place. And interesting. That's great. So third runner up, the problem solver.
Yeah, I'll jump in again, and because I know we were looking at some of the pictures before we started, and this one resonated with me because I've been fighting fires all day, and I do a lot of that in my day-to-day, partially just because of where I sit within the organization at the moment.
We heard that you actually have a revolving door in the offices.
Yeah, it's amazing, and I think there are so many so many things that come up. It's, you know, is this something where there's a technical problem? Is there some kind of political situation that needs to be sort of managed? There's a lot of nuance that goes into some of those, or ideally there's a lot of nuance that goes into some of those. And I think something that also goes from the builder into the problem solving. I think one of the reasons we end up in a lot of problem solving is not necessarily because there's something wrong, which I'm putting in air quotes, with the particular solution we have, or maybe say for the sake of argument, how something's been tagged or that kind of thing. Is more about, you know, did we get people sort of at the right spot on the change journey? Because change management is such a big part of rolling out either a brand new dam or changing to a new system. People don't like change. They're very set in their ways. And I think, you know, what I've seen in my experiences, I would say, especially in the past sort of 10 or 15 years or so, is that part does not get enough kind of care and feeding. And you need people who have that deep knowledge of how the dam works and how it's going to work for customers to be able to tell sort of, you know, why you're making this change and what it's going to mean for those end users, and how things may be different. And again, bringing them on what's going to happen now versus later. Because if you don't do that well, or if you don't have the resources to do that well, you end up in a lot of problems where people say, I don't like this. It doesn't do what X did, or I liked what happened before, or I don't want to do this. I don't like this changed my way of working. And a lot of those problems do end up being from, you know, kind of not adequately preparing the way, if you like, which you can't always do as one person or even a small team of people. So I think there's that big piece, but you do need to be able to solve those technical problems. If your site goes down, you know, your dam is inaccessible somewhere, who's on point for that? What's your disaster management? There's a lot of things there to build in. And again, ideally, this is more than one person, but again, you have to think, you know, is it a technical problem? Is it a people problem? You know, or is it just a change to ways of working, and how can you help bring people on that journey? So lots of problems to solve. You can't solve them all. And then there's just that bit around prioritization as well. So that's my day.
Yeah, what Lisa said resonated with a fair bit of my experience, certainly dealing with a number of clients who are digital asset managers or who want, you know, or need to get one. I think one of the main characteristics of digital asset managers and the firefighting problem solving aspect is how much of this you're working on your own quite a lot, or with like a very small team of people. It still seems to be an issue with senior management that the dam is perceived as, okay, this is important now, but you need to do it with like sort of one of you or possibly two or three. And just because of that, because there's you may be working on your own, you have to be good at problem solving, because there isn't anybody else who's going to come along and solve the problems for you. So I think, yeah, that's one of the key issues with this, and why this hat is particularly appropriate. I mean, you know, the sort of problems, I probably don't need to go through the kind of things that people experience, but yeah, sort of metadata disasters where, there's a whole bunch of assets been uploaded that are critical for some up and coming commercial or project or whatever, and no one's catalogued them properly, so they can't be found. The system going down, the system not working properly, and then you've got to actually either fix that yourself, or you've got to liaise with the vendor and deal with the vendor's support department. And then the sort of intermediate problems where it's kind of, well, we've provided the vendor saying, well, we've provided you with all these batch tools to import a load of metadata, but of course the tools might not work properly or might not work as you expect them to. So there's all that sort of stuff. And I think really, yeah, this is one of the key things is you're going from these really high level, like sort of abstract business problems, dealing with senior management, right the way down to minute technical detail, often within the space of a few minutes of each other, or even at the same time. And I think that's one thing that's not appreciated by a lot of people who are not actively managing digital assets.
Yeah, I used to actually have one of these hats because I used to work for emergency services, fire rescue as well, a number of years ago. But as far as problem solving, it starts with triage, right? You know, where is the biggest problem? Because there's usually not just one. there's usually fires in many different corners of said place. And you have to figure out which one is the most urgent one to solve that you can solve with said resources. And then figuring out, what is the challenge? Is it the people, which is usually one of the most important because your users are quite important. And so is your vendor. And so is all the supporting network of things that make that system work beyond just the technology itself. Is it the people, the process or workflow challenges, you know, something's broken and it's not working as expected. Or is it the information? Right, which is one of the key drivers of being able to use a DAM, right? Where can you find and use, and is it triggered properly to find and use that individual asset that you really really need wherever it's supposed to go, when it's supposed to go there, thinking at it as not only as a whole and not as a silo, because you know thinking as a not just a fixed biz unit where I only care about the DAM and it's that's only my focus, because usually many of the DAMs today are connected to other systems, whether it's a website, whether it's an e-com, whether it's some other thing or things that it's feeding those digital assets, whether it's audio, video, text, graphics, photos, whatever that happens to be, and figuring out eventually, you know, it could be budgetary challenges, you know, where you know budgets don't necessarily get bigger for some reason, and if there are more than one unit, one group, one department using it, can you share the costs? Can you share the damages? Probably not, because most people want to like, oh, it's somebody else's problem. So they typically don't want to do that. But it also comes down to governance and making sure that doesn't happen over again, and finding those root causes of what the challenges are, if you can find them and if you can mitigate them, because they're not always necessarily in your control or amongst all the different things that Ralph and Lisa mentioned. So, you know, figuring out how to solve the problem and if it's worth solving, you know, as well, and if it's on you or someone else, and as a group for that matter, to solve, and you know, hopefully not return to it repeatedly with the same problem.
If it's worth solving, I love that. The questions are starting to come in, and I forgot to mention in the beginning of the webinar, please use the Q&A button. We'll have plenty. We'll have saved some time for questions, but they're starting to come in. One in particular pertaining to what we're talking about right now is, what is a fairly common problem that arises? This should be interesting.
That is an interesting one. I think I'm going to start with the one that's probably the bane of most people's existence when it comes to DAM, bad metadata. Things are tagged incorrectly. Things aren't tagged at all. Or maybe your data model no longer supports, you know, something you need to get in, and you haven't had the time to, you know, go back, refresh, you know, look at it and say, oh, do we need to expand to have these new content types, you know, or maybe you're trying to sort of shove in something new. Maybe your company had an acquisition and now you have this sort of bolus of content and you can kind of get it in, but is it really good enough to find the thing again? Or, you know, your users have a complete disconnect with maybe how they're trying to find these things. Maybe you think they're all tagged beautifully, perfectly, and you've done your user testing, but it turns out that those weren't your main set of users. Other people are looking for these things and can't find it. So I think the most common one is always going to, you know, come back to metadata, and either it's wrong or it's not fit for purpose for your particular customer set, or again, people just haven't tagged it. And that's, you know, again, that goes back to governance, and that's not always an easy solve, even if they're forced to. they may not do it right. So you need to find that happy medium.
I've got a small problem actually, which is it's fairly trivial. And that's rights and the risk that your organization will get sued if digital assets are uploaded and then subsequently used without the proper rights and permissions. So yeah, there's that one to deal with. Which obviously is not a big deal until you're obviously faced with receiving the solicitors or attorneys' letters and so on. But yeah, there's another one. I think in general with the problems, it's kind of, yeah, we could do about another 20 or 30 webinars and still not have covered even sort of 10% of them.
Yeah, I've seen a number of them, just like Ralph and Windsor and Lisa just mentioned, as well as, you know, rights and permissions to the users, right? Are the appropriate users have the rights to see those images or use them as they do actually need them to use them, or are they using them inappropriately, like Ralph mentioned, where people learn about rights the hard way after they get in trouble, sometimes sued. Then you know, sometimes dams are justified by after the lawsuits, sadly enough, and then they discover rights management by force, legal force, sadly. It's a matter of finding out what those problems are and mitigating them as quickly as you can. But the common challenges are metadata, to your point, and the users that are using assets appropriately or not. it's the short story.
And maybe to build on that just a little bit more too, you're absolutely right, but also just, you know, user access and permissions, again, just onboarding users should be relatively straightforward, but you might have very, very, very complex permissions groups. If people are allowed to see X, but not Y. And again, especially in regulated industries, it can be really, really difficult. Or again, maybe people in one region can see something, but they can't over here. Just maintaining those groups, it's not as easy necessarily as having your DAM go out and kind of hit your Active Directory or something. There may be a whole organization that needs to look after this. That can be, you know, again, something that sounds pretty trivial. Getting someone access to the system can be, you know, just a minefield in terms of, you know, potential compliance and other kinds of risk.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And often the taggers are not the people using it, the asset.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
Yeah. But we'll talk about that later. Maybe.
That's great. That's amazing, isn't it? How many problems we handle as digital asset managers. Something I think is worth mentioning along those lines is because we are the leaders, right? We are overseeing what's going on, how we hold ourselves, right? The context that we hold in having a no problem attitude. A lot of ways, the way in which Henrik and I often approach that is this idea of people don't like change, but they can embrace new, and just being able to approach something with a no problem attitude and carrying out and just getting it done. So obviously a lot of things can go wrong, a lot of things that we need to deal with, but what's equally important in my mind is how we handle it as leaders and just chipping away at it. All right, so second runner up, the negotiator.
Oh gosh, I'll jump in on this one again because it is a hat you wear a lot, even, you know, not just in the problem solving space, but this can be really, you know, sort of negotiating one-on-one. You may have to go back to your vendor and say, oh, we discovered we need this too. Is this something that's already in our contract? You may be working with procurement to say, oh, we need X or Y. But I know I'm always wearing my negotiator hat when I'm looking at my backlog, planning my roadmap, what's going to be in a particular sprint as we're looking at different kinds of functionality. You know, there are a lot of trade-offs for this and a lot of prioritization. And a lot of it is really about going back and forth and saying, again, especially if you're in a big, enterprise kind of situation where big market X does not want the thing, but all your other markets do. How do you make that trade-off? Who do you talk to? Who are your advocates? And I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes in terms of making sure you have people who can advocate for what you're doing. Even if you're not always going to agree, you've got to be cultivating those relationships. And that's a part of the job that's almost never in the job description. So you have to be doing that work as well as straight up, you know, working with procurement, like I said, or working with your vendor, obviously, to make sure that you're both on the same page and trying to get things in their roadmap, and also, you know, trying to manage the expectations on the other side. There's a lot of negotiation, and a lot of it, you know, you become really good at it over time, but you know, you're always going to have bad days too. So I think you have to be prepared for it not to always go your way. So.
Yeah, I'd agree absolutely with all of Lisa's points there. It all sounds quite familiar. I think the other aspect with the negotiation is when it comes to your relationship with senior management, not just between resolving conflicts between departments, but there's also senior management saying things like, well, we want to expand what we're doing with the dam, but we want you to do that with less money.
Yeah,
which is sort of, it's probably the one that everybody's quite used to.
Yeah,
and there's all those sort of things where you have to, what you really want to say is, well, how do I do that? And then some colourful language that I'll include. So you have to put those in a way that's politically acceptable within the framework of the organisation. And I think, yeah, exactly, as Lisa said, yeah, you sort of got to learn how to do this. I think the other thing as well, with being a digital asset manager, and really this isn't appreciated enough, is that you have to have a really intimate knowledge of the organisation that you work for, and their culture and how things are done and what the conventions are. And that side of it, you can't learn that. You can only learn that within the organisation. You can't, none of that comes by default, as it were.
And negotiation skills don't come by default either.
No.
I would recommend that, just like speaking skills and presentation skills, yes, they should be practiced, but you should learn them. You know, there's courses for this. There's information on the internet about how to negotiate, how to present properly, how to speak properly. So that, because it's important even more nowadays in the last 2 years, for obvious reasons, since now we're working more remotely worldwide, right? Especially if you work for a global organization, which many of us do, or national organization. And even if you're not regional for that matter, or within a locality, you're not necessarily going to be like in the same room anymore, because those days are, for the most part, have not come back and may not come back. So negotiating properly and speaking properly and making those points that you need to make understood by the audience that you're speaking to is really, really critical. So whether you're asking for more budget, more people, even if they're temps, right? Even if they're contractors, because there's a big, you know, new number of fresh assets being created that were, let's just say, seasonal or whatever, or once a year or after a big photo shoot or whatever that looks like, to upload those, that if you have to train them, so be it, you know, but you need a lot of help, because there's, I'm just going to make up a number, 100,000 new assets. And yes, we could do that ourselves, but then that takes away from the other things that we need to do, because if we wear many hats, how much time do we spend on this versus that, right? And the fires don't go out by themselves. Not that you want them to, unless you want a smoldering house. it's a matter of figuring out, you know, negotiating your time, negotiating, you know, it's like, okay, you want me to add more hats to my agenda versus, oh, we need to hire more people. Well, how do we negotiate that? Right? And how do you justify it? Well, the one way I've justified it is I look at the number of hours I spend on a project, right? And say, oh, I've spent 80 hours a week. That sounds like 2 FTEs. And I could water down my salary forever, or maybe the next fiscal year or fiscal quarter or whatever it looks like, we can justify a second person that is not a clone of what I do, but more importantly, take over things that I don't want to do or not very good at, right? Figure out what those are, right? Let's pretend that I figure out what my weaknesses are, and yes, I could learn them, or I could hire my weakness, right? So that they do that and I do what my strengths are, and negotiating those. And everyone knows what those weaknesses happen to be if they haven't figured it out, or they will very shortly once your system is live and functioning, and negotiating those.
That's great points. Someone's asking, with asset managers expected to inhibit so many different roles, how do you effectively create boundaries so that you can focus on priorities without coming off as unhelpful?
It's a great question. And I think part of it, again, as leaders, you have to role model good behavior, you know, and say, you know what, these are below the line. These are not going to be done by X or Y date. You know, really do that expectation management and be really clear about it and say this, but not this, or this will happen later. But again, then you put on that negotiation hat too and say, you know what, I really need someone who's just going to look after, you know, whether it's this capability or this function, or, and again, I think rights management is a great one to sort of pull up, because I'm like, I would love to have someone just dedicated to that full time, but that's essentially a product, if you like, within my damn stack that they own, again, a capability product, however you want to look at it. I think if you can start to look at what are kind of the discrete pieces and parts of any particular role, and should that be its own person, or can one person own maybe two or three of these things, but own it comfortably where they still hopefully have room to grow and learn some new things? Because I think as our initial conversation, yeah, that the Frank and I had thinking about, you know, the dam as a field has matured so much that we are well beyond everyone being either kind of, you know, a techie, you know, sort of working on the back end, or a librarian tagging things. There are all of these other roles that need to be looked after. You know, you've got kind of the product management piece. You've got change management. You've got, again, tagging is very important, getting things into the system. So you absolutely have that librarian role at the core, but you have all these other things that have grown around it. And depending on the size and you know, sort of function of your organization, you may not need to do all of them, but I think you want to be clear that these are all owned by someone if they're important to the organization, and they're not just kind of an extra you're stuck doing. You know, get it into a job description and make sure you're getting credit for it at the end of the year. That's, I think, really important.
Yeah, again, I agree with everything Lisa said there. That's an excellent summary. I think the main thing with all this is you've got this perennial trade-off. You know, there's time, money, quality. You can have two of them, you can't have all three. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are your boundaries. It's pick the two that are important. And that will sort of, that'll define everything from there, I think, in general terms.
Yeah, and it, of course, it depends on the organization and how quickly or how often that cycle of new assets comes in, right? Or refreshed assets, or whatever that's life cycle for the assets happens to be. Like, I've worked in organizations where there's brand new assets every single day, and they're not from a photo shoot. They're all 100% unique, you know, in their own special way. And so they all have to be tagged. And if you tag individual assets, you also have to QA them, right? So how often do you do that? Well, we were doing it every business morning, right? So that we would QA everything that was uploaded and tagged, so to make sure that it was following said standards, right? And throwing back everything that wasn't within that standard for, and we had a laundry list of reasons why. And then we were all templated with the email templates saying, we're throwing this back because this needs to be fixed, and it's asset number, asset ID, whatever, and fix these, please. And then CC their boss, right? So there's a accountability. And throwing it back and having that loop. And back to Lisa's point, yes, a rights person is great. Someone who just focuses on metadata and taxonomy is also great, so that the digital asset management other professional, let's pretend it's one of us, they just focus on overarching, you know, meetings that most people don't want to be in, and things like that, and just invite the respective parties when they need to be, so they can continue focusing on the work, because work doesn't get done in meetings, sadly enough. No. So,
you gotta call a meeting for that.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's all great answers. I'm not surprised. Creating boundaries is a big part of that. Is a negotiator role is listening. And as you all outlined, creating those boundaries is understanding and listening to what is being asked And then just maybe taking some time and breaking that down and showing the hours and the time that it takes to do each of those, and then having them to make the decision. Okay, so what's the priority? And if so, you know, it's going to sound like a shameless plug, but, you know, companies like My Damn Services and others are out there to supplement and complement your workflows, right? So whether it be your strengths that you want to hold on to, or if there's menial tasks like metadata, for example, or other things that you can delegate, might make sense for you to put together a budget or some idea of how you can increase your productivity through outside help. All right. Number one. Oh, what a surprise. What would a digital asset management discussion be without metadata? I know it was already mentioned, but I'm sure you guys
And it's so important. I mean, that's the thing. It's really at the core of everything you do. And again, this is something that to me absolutely needs to be owned by someone. This is, you know, can be more than one full-time job. Certainly when I was at Amazon, I managed a team of taxonomists who looked at everything across the world, and everyone had, again, very deep knowledge of their particular areas. So I think, you know, it's there at the core. If you get it wrong, this is where you're always going to run into trouble. You need someone who's got that depth of understanding around, you know, around the taxonomy and metadata space, or even ontology, kind of get out there and start to think about these other relationships between things. But I think the other thing that is so important too is having that deep knowledge of again, the sort of norms, if you like, of your particular company and industry. Even if you've worked in a lot of different industries, whatever company you come into, you need to be able to quickly get up to speed on, okay, but how do people here really speak? What are they really looking for? Because they're not going to tell you straight up. And so I think it's such an interesting role too, because you've got that sort of how it should work. But until you really get into the organization, and that can take time, you know, that could take you 6 months, that could take you a year until you really know these things in depth, and maybe even longer. You know, you're not going to be kind of operating at 100%. And how many people do you need to do it too? You know, what's the scope? And again, how do you manage your data model? Does it happen in your DAM? Is it outside in another tool? There's a lot that goes into just this part. And again, if it's wrong, everything kind of falls apart. So it's so important. And it's absolutely one of those things that is, like you say, yes, a metadata fairy or a unicorn skill set, because you need great people who can really bring all of these threads together. And it's really difficult. And I think that's the one thing I would say to hiring managers out there. I know we all understand that, but making your boss's boss understand that, that's the sort of the happy thing. If you can get that done, you're golden.
Just to focus on the metadata side of it. Yeah, as Lisa's mentioned, it's the cornerstone of everything. In a lot of ways, I've referred to Dan before as metadata operations. In some ways, might be actually be a better term for the whole subject area. But just to focus on one aspect of it, the cataloging, which I think is really where things tend to sort of slow down. That's the most time-consuming aspect of this. You've got this decision to make about what method do you use and what is appropriate for the assets that you're dealing with. So is it batch cataloging? Is it doing individual cataloging of individual assets? Is AI appropriate? Usually not, I would argue, but sometimes it can be. And various other sort of automated methods, or you bring in other people. So there's that whole side of operational side of metadata and about getting the cataloging done, which I think, yeah, is in particular where, yeah, your metadata fairies start to earn their, I was going to say corn, but fairy dust, whatever the appropriate metaphor is, for this area.
I guess the wings ears, yeah, or whatever is appropriate. Ears would kind of
wait a minute. Is this a hat?
Yes. So what's interesting is outside of the digital asset management community and metadata community, that there's very little understanding about metadata. People just expect metadata fairy dust to be sprinkled and assets to be magically found by accidents, you know, or auto magically, because, you know, someone sprinkled some metadata dust on assets, and look, it's magic. It's like, no, it's a lot of effort. It's a lot of cataloging, a lot of arranging, organizing, et cetera, and reorganizing. And as things change, because they will, right? Unless you stop making products or you regress in the number of products you suddenly have, or services for that matter, or whatever your organization or company, however they make their money. But realistically speaking, you're only going to accumulate more digital assets. And that means you're only going to accumulate more metadata. And if you don't have someone focusing on it, it's going to be more painful and you're going to have more fires and you're not going to find your stuff and it won't go where you need it to go if it's triggered by metadata, because people can't see it. People can't find it. If they can't find it, they can't use it. If you can't use it, you can't sell it. So it's really that simple. So metadata is really, really critical, and it gets downplayed because it gets misunderstood by the large part of organizations. They've heard of it, usually nefariously, for the wrong reasons. They don't understand it. They don't know where it lives. They don't know how it gets there, but we do. Usually. And if we don't, we need to learn very, very quickly.
Or on the flip side, they think they understand it and now it's going to solve everything, even though they're not quite sure what it is. Just, you know, I get into a lot of conversations with people like, well, we need to do some tagging around this. They're like, what do you mean by that? And so there's a lot of playing that back to people and understanding what do they really mean? Because people will hear these terms and then kind of go off piste and you have to kind of get them back.
True.
I think that there's this perception that because metadata is perceived as boring, that means it's easy as well. And you know, it really isn't. Sometimes, yes, it can be boring, but it's never easy.
Yeah.
That's terrific. We're just about time. There was another question I thought might be interesting to hear what you guys have to say around it. If you were designing a digital asset management department, which roles would you create first?
I know when I've done this exact thing, I usually have, you know, I will start off with the DAM manager, which again, hopefully grows into a bigger role over time. And again, that person does start off wearing a lot of hats where they are doing that sort of, how is content coming in? Is it getting tagged correctly? Is there something we need to change in the data model? But then also start to build that out more broadly so that that one person doesn't have to do everything, you know, have other librarians, you can have support people. But I think the other things too are, again, if you can really kind of pull out and you know, dedicate specific staff to things like rights management or to things like automation, I think that is fantastic. And automation doesn't necessarily mean AI. It can be, how can I improve a workflow? How can I, you know, sort of have metadata templates. There's a lot of things you can do. But I think the other thing too, that I would love to see more of, especially when it comes back to metadata, is yes, I would love to have someone whose job it is just to own the data model, so it's not everyone else's day to day, but that they also have a real clear handoff with master data management, which doesn't always exist. And I think that's my sort of hot pro tip for people who are maybe just getting into the field is, look at master data management too. Think about how your roles interact, because I think there's a lot there that's not happening in companies big and small, and we can really help each other out. So I'd love to see that handshake with master data management, as well as someone technical who can kind of oversee your integrations and say, is this one we need to do? Yes, no. But again, there's care and feeding there, so it's not a one and done. So that's why I like to have it a permanent role, because they understand the business need. But again, at the end of the day, it's all about what does this business need and how, you know, how do these roles support that? But I love to give people, you know, discrete, you know, things to own so that one, they've got somewhere to go in their career, but also two, there's that variety and they complement one another.
Yeah, to try and boil it down, I think I would see it as three to four major sort of roles as metadata operations. The technical side of it, all the integrations, and yeah, being able to go toe to toe with the vendor and whoever's providing these other systems. Rights management, in most organizations, that's going to be ideally, yeah, separate person. I think a fourth one, and this would be a tough sell, I suspect, but it would be someone responsible solely for change management and adoption.
Yes, please. Yeah.
You know, if you can, find the photos of the boss in a compromising position. And so, well, can we have the fourth, the change management expert as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and revisiting the point that you're probably going to be alone as a digital asset management professional when in the beginning, because they'd be like, well, we don't want really what you do aside from managing the system that didn't work by itself, unlike all the other systems, allegedly. And it's absolutely true that that systems need to be able to talk to each other. Therefore, the data models may need to talk to each other too. That's very important to Lisa's point. But what I would say is while you're alone, figure out how you're allocating your time, because if you're spending a stupid amount of time with customer service or user adoption, you may need a user adoption, because are you no longer hiring new contractors and employees? Are you no longer having new users internally or externally? Likely you're going to retrain people all over again every single time they forget how to use the system. And you know, do you have training for it? Do you have someone who's building training for it? Do you have metadata? Figure out how you're using your time, whether it's firefighting 100% of the time, hopefully not. Maybe you need a firefighter, not literally, but figuratively speaking, who's gonna manage said problems on a daily basis. So, or you dedicate time, like in the beginning, in the very beginning of my morning, I'm gonna focus on metadata from the assets that were uploaded yesterday or last week, or whatever that cycle looks like. And then in the middle of the afternoon, I'm going to take, maybe meetings. And then after the meetings, I'm going to take action items that are priorities according to business units that actually are caring and feeding for me. So understanding where are the priorities, not only within your organization, but also that you understand as priorities and that you can negotiate that they are priorities because you understand them, because last time we didn't do this, that happened. Therefore, it's a root cause that needs to be, taken care of again. And taking care of those challenges and being that metadata fair is as needed, right? But, there has to be a time frame for it, because you're not going to get suddenly more than 24 hours in a day. You're not going to get more than 168 hours in the week. And you're probably don't want to work much more than 40, 50 hours, realistically speaking, per week. But you may need to in the beginning. And then eventually when you figure out how you're actually allocating your time, and literally if you are salaried, divide it up and figure out what percentage of your time you're using where, so that you know where it's being spent and what you actually need help for, so that you can allocate a metadata fairy or a rights person or a user adoption person or a training person, or whatever that might be, whether it's temporary or permanent, so be it, right? Yes, it's budgetary, but it's also priority based. Does the company really need this? Well, what are they willing to dedicate to it aside from your time?
That's excellent. These webinars always go so quickly. It's always great to be with you guys. Thank you so much for taking time out. There's more questions rolling in. We're starting to stimulate some conversation. And all I can say at this point is some of us need to be somewhere at the top of the hour. We ran out of time, but please stay in contact with MyDAM Services. And I'm sure we'll have Lisa, Ralph, Henrik on again soon, aside from some other great personalities and people, experts in the industry. So, hope you guys had fun. I know I had fun. And until next time, take care.
Always a pleasure. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Bye. Thank you, Ralph. Thanks, Henrik. We'll talk to you.
Thanks, Frank.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.